Welcome to this episode of Love Bites, your only podcast for detailed breakdowns of the George Lopez Show, episode by episode. I'm one of your Lopez lovers, Kyle Overkill, joined by one of my favorite people, Tim. How you doing?
I'm doing quite well. How are you?
Not bad. I fixed a hole in the wall today. It's not like a hole, but like my kids pulled down, well, I don't know anything about houses, and we bought a house, or we had a house built, and I put in, I don't even know what they're called, they're like the screws that like go into drywall and like hold it in the back, or something, I don't know, but I put one of those in, and then my kid pulled down his curtain rod, so it like ripped a hole out of the wall, and I fixed that. It was like the most like exciting thing I've done in months. It looks like shit, but it's
fine. They should break things more often.
Yeah, I feel good about myself and not so good about having kids, but that's a whole other thing. But I do have some bad news, Tim.
What's that?
We did it again.
We don't have time.
No, we're not going to have time to talk about the episode of the George Lopez Show where George warns Carmen about how boys are evil after she comes home with a hickey by her boyfriend, and Angie and George go after him. And after accidentally meeting a single mother who believes that Max is his son, George's friend Ernie decides to use Max to meet women. We actually have a really good episode. We're going to talk to one of my favorite current creators and about one of my favorite books I probably read in the last year. I fucking love this book. So we're going to be talking to Al Goffa about his amazing book, Dark Angels of Darkness, and kind of generally about his other stuff as well. But first off, we'd like to thank Al for joining us. How are you doing?
Pretty good, thank you.
So I'll get right into it.
Yep.
Was your goal to set out to, on the second page, to create the most passionate kiss ever recorded in comics? I gotta love that so much.
I actually didn't think about it, but thank you. Yeah. It was just natural to put some love in there.
Yeah, it's a great way to start it, especially a few pages later they get obliterated. This book is so much fun, and like it is, I think I can speak for me and Tim. Like this is like the like antithesis of like comics I love. Like, I mean, beautifully drawn and uniquely rendered, but then also, like, it's just, like, fun, it's frenetic pace, like, it's just, like, a love letter to, like, comics and manga, and it's just, it's, like, a beautiful book. How did you, I mean, I know you talked about this, and, like, even I love on the physical copy, you guys included, like, the little interview, which I've never seen before, like, in the, like, about author section, which was awesome. But like, what was the single idea that kind of pushed you to make Dark Angel of Darkness, especially because you've done other stuff, and like this is kind of like the longest thing I've read from you, and I think
well, being my first like long book, let's say, I think it just represents most of my intentions in general, and it gives a good idea of what's coming next. So I didn't have one specific idea. It was like a whole life of being inspired by comics, like brought me there to make that book. So most of the things you appreciate about it, like it's what I've been appreciating about the comics I've been reading. Yeah, it's not really specific in terms of like as like for my home bibliography. I mean, like the next book I'm gonna do, they will always have a more specific reason why I do them, of course. But yeah, this one is just like, I'm glad to hear what you said about it, because that's what I always been trying to go for.
I was listening to, I think you were talking to Troy when you were doing the Inky Knuckles cast, or like the live stream. You were kind of talking about like the approach to being a writer and an artist, and obviously on majority of your work you take both roles, and especially this. Is that something with this where it almost feels like a like free form, like page to page type comic? Is that something that inherently worked for you as like a writer and artist? Like, were you able to, were you structuring it out, or was it kind of what worked next to next page?
Well, it's a good question. Well, for this book specifically, and how can I, sorry if sometimes I stop, I'm trying to find my words in English, and if you don't understand what I say, just ask me to repeat. But yeah, for this book specifically, I had to go straight ahead, like without thinking. I couldn't like organize ideas too much because it was just so overwhelming to just like try to make a comic. And when I say to this book specifically, like I might not have other book published, but I'm working on books right now. So, and the process of doing them was very different than from Dark Angels of Darkness. But like my main goal was to just have as much energy as possible. And so like I have this idea of scene, and I just do it, and I'll hope it will work with the next idea of scene, and I just like kind of attach it all together. There's about 80 pages that I haven't used for Dark Angel of Darkness because they just didn't work out there. So it's not a process I recommend for a long-term career. And it's actually like I wouldn't be able to do it again, just in terms of health, but also in terms of I wouldn't find it as interesting now that I've done it. But I think it was like completely necessary to do it because, yeah, otherwise I will just write something that I've heard of. Like I will have write a story like I'm supposed to write a story, and that will have not only limit my writing and my story, but it will also have limit the opportunities for creative scenes and fun drawings, because each scene that are already preconceived will require certain drawings, and they might not be as interesting as the one I will do if I don't know where I'm going.
Hmm. Well, it's interesting, like, because I mean, even in that sense where, like I said, it reads very much like free flowing, but like very like abstract kind of like expression of that, but also like it's extremely well paced at the same time. Like the reveal of Imperius is like, I don't know if I want to spoil, but like, is that like, I mean, it's part of the crux of the comic, but also like it's generally like well paced, and like the second you realize what it is actually falling from the sky, like I like laughed out loud, which I like always feel weird doing, but like I was like, holy shit, because I thought for a long time it was a baby, and I was like, oh shit. And so I think at the same time, like, you, it's extremely like well paced in the sense of like kind of getting moment to moment. Is that something you had like at least larger ideas of kind of where you wanted to get with the story? I mean, obviously there's the stuff with like Megan and then kind of the fusion and then where we kind of end. Is that something at least, did you know like the general larger idea and it was just kind of working the smaller moments to get there?
I don't really remember what was exactly like already in my mind when I was doing the book and what I discovered, but like for now when I write, like most of it is part intuitive and like also knowing where you're going. So it was probably the same for Dark Angels of Darkness. And the intuitive aspect is like, of course, is like influenced by your knowledge and your ideas, but there is this thing with like where I'm very interested in Jar and all the codes, the narrative codes that you see in Jar. But like, I want to have fun with it and make them like surprising and just reveal other things about the story, the character, or the drawing through those codes, not just like literally use those codes. So I'm glad you had like fun and you were surprised at sometimes, because that's pretty much the whole point of Dark Angel of Darkness, is to be like surprising narratively and fun in terms of drawings.
By the end of the book, did you feel you were like inherently learned a lot about your style? I mean, I have questions about your style I can ask after, like, because I think it is genuinely unique, and I think kind of merging a lot of like really great things about comics. By the end, was this kind of an exercise into like, how we're, I'm going to say, what am I thinking of the word, Tim? Tim, not rehoning, that's not a word. I don't know. refining. Why did I say rehoning? That's not a word. Refining your style. Is that something like by the end you were kind of getting closer to like where you wanted this book to be, but also like experimenting more in what you've done in the past?
Yeah. Well, so far I always made believe myself that every book I will do or comics I will do would be like changing my style. But actually, like, I will start with an idea of how I want to draw it, and I just end up like drawing what's best at the moment. And I think in Dark Angel of Darkness, there's something, I don't want to say immature, but like you see a lot of influence, and sometimes, like, I think it all somewhat together, but like some people might find it too eccentric in the variety of influences and style it has. And I don't think it's a bad thing. My work is getting clearly Dark Angel of Darkness, allowing myself to draw whatever I feel like, helped me to just like feel better or less good about certain drawings. And now I'm more mature, of course. A whole book of like not limiting yourself really helps. And after that, I try to make believe myself, oh, I'll do a book with like small characters like in Tintin. And I just don't do it because at some point I want to do a close shot, and like it just doesn't happen.
Where did you kind of come to comics in terms of like less, maybe not style, but were you coming to it from like art school into comics, or was it always kind of comics and then refining it that way, or were you working in different mediums prior to this and then came to comics?
I think my first like drawing influence is Batman Animated, the one with Bruce Timm, like Yeah, that was like when I was like 4 or 5 years old. I was just drawing like Bruce Timm Batman, and then I move on to Dragon Ball, and I pretty much stuck with that for like 10 years. Then I went to after high school, I went to art school, and then I opened my mind to like just, you know, your classic contemporary and historical painters. And that really, really inspired me. And I was thinking to become a painter for a while. But then after my, it was a 2-year program. After my 2 years, I went to an animation school. And over there, I started getting more influenced by, like, I discovered just more comics and more animation. And I think I have a good, I had a good mixture of like more commercial and more, difficult kind of art to find. And through time I was 20 or something, so like now I'm 31. Through the last years I've discovered like a lot of different artists from a lot of different fields. I can't hide my love for comics. Like, most of my favorite artists are comic book artists, of course, but I really love like Félix Vallotton. He's like a French painter from the 19th century, and he keeps like being one of my main inspiration. So ultimately, like, my comic book influence like show more in my earlier works, and because it was just instinctive to like try to emulate like tricks from the comic medium, which makes sense. But like, I'm glad lately about my drawing, because it's like taking a more unique form. I'm letting happen things that I never seen in comics.
Well, I think looking at like Dark Angel of Darkness, like, I think if you like, there's like a cursory glance at it, you could see like Johnny Ryan's Prison Pit or something like that, or even very kind of like European. But there's like, I think deep, like, the way you, like, approach colors, and then specifically, like, shadows and, like, shading, like, it is very, like what you said, kind of painterly, and there's, like, a real understanding of space and shapes in it. Like, there's some panels in here, like, with the use of the lighting and shading is, like, insane. It's, like, a very small one early on where someone's just like, It's the first moment where there's a fusion of the two lovers, and it's just like a black, and it says like, "Don't destroy us, please," and there's like red shading and like yellow eyes on it. It's so good. Like, I mean, you reference like Batman the animated series, but I think of like kind of that opening where that is like a painted, very painted style of kind of the theme, and they use like really great shadows and lighting in that, and it gets like a really kind of like classic art style feel, but like merged with comics. Like, I get a real sense of that in a lot of your work, especially again like kind of in the shadows and the way you choose to light things.
Yeah, thank you. Well, for a long time, lightning and was really one of my preoccupation. Because I just didn't understand, like, you know, like some kind of neophyte question you ask yourself, like where do I put blacks? Where do I put grays? Like, why does that artist decide to put that leg black? Like, why? Like, why not the other leg black? And like, it can get like really overwhelming when you're not confident and you're not used to do pages. So I wanted to understand like why those people make those decisions. So I've been thinking a lot about lightning, and eventually I discovered Alexstat, and that was just like a mind-blowing experience for me, because I realized that he will never sacrifice the composition for lightning, and he will never sacrifice the read of the page for lightning, but he will always use lightning to like create abstract shapes that help you read the page better and like have a better sense of what's going on in the panel. So yeah, that at that moment I start to really feel more confident. Yeah, the problem with not the problem with Alexstat to me is like is that God is like the goat of comics, but the thing with Alexstat is like most people find it like not very interesting when they look at it for the first time, and I think there's something cold about it. Most people will just more jump on Richard Corben or Moebius because they have a more subjective and a more organics. You feel like they enjoy drawing, while Alexstat, you don't even know if he likes drawing. And so I'm trying to keep that aspect in my drawing. I'm trying to not be too calculated. I'm trying to keep it somewhat loose and somewhat like have mistakes and feel more subjective a little bit. But yeah, without sacrificing like a good lightning and a good composition.
Is that like you said, that come with the confidence over time? I think, again, kind of in that opening sequence, after those two are destroyed, all the characters, kind of like the like army of people under the ship, are standing, and like you don't color the ground. You have everyone kind of in like a purple shading tone with yellows, and like, it's like you can clearly tell like the perspective and the ground, and again, like there's no coloring in it, like they're just standing on white, but like just because of the way you have done the like shading on the people, like you completely, like your eyes fill in like, yeah, the perspective of the ground. It's like crazy.
Yeah, I like that. Mike Mignola does that a lot, and that really blew me each time I saw it. And I mean, why tell two time something you can say one time? Like, people understood already. So, plus comics are read so fast too. So like, you can make your picture more poignant and more graphic by not saying it two time, you know?
Was this for this book? I know like in the about section of the book, you kind of reference like, you know, Dragon Ball, and especially with the fusions, which are awesome, and it is like the joy of that, I think, growing up, like especially with Dragon Ball, because it was such a slow burn, and you would like go episode to episode. When you finally got someone like to the next form, it was so exciting. Like, I just want someone to have a new character so I can get like a new action figure. Is that a lot of what went into the character design for these guys? Like, was it just generally like what could be the coolest looking guy at the moment, especially for the fusions?
That's a good question, because you asked me earlier like why what brought me to do Dark Angel Adonis, and I was talking about my general influence, but I forgot the whole concept of Dark Angel of Darkness. I haven't read it in like a year or something, but Yeah, like that was the main goal at first. Like, and you refer Prison Pit earlier. That too was an influence. Actually, I really like. You just felt like was a kid enjoying it. Well, a really violent kid, but like a kid enjoying himself with toys, and so yeah, there was a bit of that. I wish I put more fission, but like I think the whole enthusiasm to see what a fusion will look like is in the book, and that was pretty much it for Dragon Ball. I really, when I was younger, I was always creating new fusion, like, oh, what will Vegeta and Piccolo will look like, and so yeah, I had to make a book about that. I think one day I'll do another book about that same subject, because I would like to make it like really thick with a lot of different fusion in it, but the difficulty was to have an interesting narrative but still have the element of fusion like dominating at the same time, and like, yeah, I had to do sacrifices.
Yeah, because I can imagine there's one point in the book where Megan or Megan, how would you do it?
Oh, I say Megan, but yeah, whatever.
He's on the tower and he's just like doing fusion after fusion, and I'm like, I want to see each fusion.
Yeah.
But that would be like a 400 page book.
I was just saying how like the art style, I find it similar to Michel Fife, and how he pulls from like 80s like G.I. Joe, but then you're pulling from Dragon Ball, and it's like starting from a similar area, I guess, but then just going off in completely different directions. And yeah, this is just so great.
Yeah, yeah, we both, I've been referred a lot to him. I also been referred to Andrew McLean, I think, and Alexis Zirit. I think you can feel the geek in all of us. Like, it's really a love letter, like, to what we've been consuming when we were kids. And also, we're all unique and different, so, like, it's exciting because, like, we're not just repeating, like, we're, like, bringing it our home, too. But, there's definitely a big love letter. And, yeah, I wasn't watching G.I. Joe, because G.I. Joe wasn't popular in Quebec, but Dragon Ball was, so that's it.
Now that you brought up Alexis Zirit, can you talk a little about your contribution to Dagger Dagger?
Sure. Matt Emmons and I, we were discussing on Instagram in private discussions, and just about like fantasy in general and like magazines, and we end up, why wouldn't we do an anthology about it? We pretty much just ask like most of the artists we like right now that makes fantasy comics, and we end up with, we asked too many people because they all pretty much said yes, so we end up with 17 artists. At first we were thinking maybe like 10, but it will work out 17, and it'll just be a very thick anthology. And Alexis Zirit was a for sure a choice because he has that kind of rock and roll Rolling Stone vibe, and I want to see that in fantasy medieval. So yeah.
For you as an artist, obviously kind of doing everything, writing in art, but the Dagger Dagger campaign is like a like hit list of like people like currently in comics who I think are doing some of the, like, again, most, some of the most original stuff, like Alexis, Artum, Matt, I mean, Luzinski stuff, and then Tyler Landry is like one of my favorite. I wish Tyler was doing like way more. Like, he did, was it Shit and Piss, was like kind of the last real thing. He's doing stuff on Patreon, but I love Tyler's stuff. For you guys to get like, what is it? It ended up with like 32,000. Is that kind of reassuring for you guys that like the stuff you're doing, again, kind of outside the mainstream of art, like if this stuff was on like, you know, a Marvel book, I would fucking love it, but like they're not gonna, like it's not there yet, which is insane. But like for you guys to put this together and be like, it's just us doing this like Bloodfy comic book anthology, and to kind of get that response, is that refreshing to you as an artist to like know like what you're doing is I think people are receptive to it and like excited to do more.
Yeah, of course it is. What one of the thing that I found, like, now I'm fine with it, but one of the thing that might have like bothered me through the beginning of this career, it's pretty much just feel alone and not getting receptions from editors and like not being answered emails and yeah. And but I always had like good feedback from fans and other artists, and so I knew like I was on the right track. But like to actually make an editorial project and like have success, and that much success too, it's like, yeah, it's really inspiring. And I feel like most of the other artists feel the same too. When the emails we're writing to each other, some are really, really stoked and really proud to be on this project. And yeah, like you said, like, it's funny because all of us have been reading Marvel comics, and like, we just wish they were doing a Conan fantasy magazine with us in it, but like, they won't. So now we have Kickstarter. It's a different period, different era, and like, we're really lucky Kickstarter exists and that like we can reach the fan without an editor. Of course, I have more work to do. I have to edit a whole magazine, which I'm not usually doing, but it's interesting and fun.
Yeah, it's kind of something that's come up like at a lot of the interviews we've done since COVID, and it was obviously present before, but like the idea of like independent creators now, like it is almost solely on you to kind of, you know, promote your work. Even if you have a book come out, like it's like, okay, like now I gotta do all the work to promote my like image book, even though it's through, like, it's insanely, like, I think even frustrating, like from a reader perspective, where like to go find out more information, I have to like track down the artist to do it. Like, whereas like, I think it's such a weird industry where like that kind of falls on you guys to not only create the product, which is, you know, hours and hours like of work to go into it, but then you have to spend hours and hours of work afterwards to like say like, hey, buy my book, hey, pre-order my book. Like, it's just like almost like a never-ending thing while you're still probably working on your next project.
Yeah, no, totally. Yeah, I wouldn't know why it ended up like that, but it's, of course, I have theories like most artists, because we're wondering what's going on. But we have to accept it, because like otherwise nothing will happen. And yeah, it's weird. You said Image, I'm not published at Image, and like for a moment, like a few years ago, I was thinking one day I'll be at Image and then it will be easy. Like, not at all. Like, a lot of artists at Image have like a hard time, and they have to like do all that advertising for themselves, which is, yeah, weird. But yeah, I guess that's like I guess it's our time too. I guess in other fields it's like that too. I don't know, like people are always like selling an idea of themselves on internet. So for me it's not natural. Like, not that I don't like people, I like people. It's just like, I would like to be completely honest all the time. And I can't. When you're selling yourself, you have to sell an idea. So there's something dishonest about being present on the internet, which I don't specifically appreciate. But like, yeah, I find a way to do it so it doesn't burn me too much, and I can concentrate on my work. And yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I've enjoyed I think you did like 3 or 4 of the like live inkings you were doing for a bit.
Sorry, what?
You did like 3 or 4 like live inkings, or they had them on you had them on YouTube, but it was you just like inking.
How do you call them? Sorry, I can't hear the word.
What's that?
I just didn't understand. What was the thing I did on YouTube? The drawing I recorded, or?
Yeah. You had recorded you like inking commissions, which was like, and I love that. There was just like silence, and I could just like put on music and like watch it and be like, I can never. I don't understand how I'm seeing him do it. I don't understand how he's doing it, but.
Yeah, it's, you know, like, just that is like, you already feel like doing another one just because of you saying that. So yeah, it proves how much the feedback is important. Like otherwise, like you feel like it's not worth it. But yeah, I stopped doing it because it's just not natural for me. Like I wouldn't wake up in the morning and oh, let's record myself drawing. Like there's something where I wasn't completely like. Of course, I'll probably if I was really committed, I could like. If I really thought it was important for my career and that I was like straight minded about it, I could probably get used to it and never think about the camcorder afterwards. But yeah, I guess I don't feel completely convinced yet. And but yeah, I think I always love watching other drawers draw. So I was like, oh, I guess that would be interesting.
And then. Also, I think one thing that's interesting, like on Instagram, and even like I like when the when you had Daggers campaign up, like you had some pencils of Dark Angel of Darkness. Are you pretty close? Like when you go to pencils, is that at that point pretty tight when you go into inking, or is there a lot of change once you're in inking?
Yeah, it depends on the drawing. Sometimes I regret not doing enough tight drawings. but then I will try to save the drawing with inking. And sometimes it will show up and it will look kind of like a less confident drawing. But sometimes it's like I will have surprise and I will discover something that really changed my way to draw. And and then I will apply that like voluntarily afterwards. But some of the times, like, I just happen to do a more tight drawing and the inking, like sometimes it changed again, even if the drawing was tight. And it's a mixture of, like, how I feel like because, like, I need to enjoy drawing. But there's also, like, I mean, there's a responsible part in it where I'm like, okay, well, you're lazy right now, draw that completely, please. And other part where, like, or you're letting yourself go, like, stop inking. So there's that voice to making it sure it's work and not just fun. But yeah, so it varies. But I think considering like if I compare myself to other artists that I've seen drawing, I think I do a really loose sketch and I most of the drawing appears in the inking. Yeah.
And because you're still pretty much pen and ink for your... At least for that, are you coloring digitally?
Yeah, so far, all the coloring I've been doing in my comics was like a request from the editor.
Oh, really?
Yeah, not that I don't like colors. I really like most of the comics. Like, when I have an idea, there's colors in it in my head. But it's just so much work to also color. So honestly, I just wish there was no color to do. And I also think my pages to be readable without color. So it's just like, yeah, ultimately, like, I'll try to do some black and white comics. And if I have the chance or if somebody else can color for me. But yeah, I use Photoshop because that's just the fastest way to do that. Like...
Because the colors in, I mean, even in Dark Angel, like, I love that it's very, like, matte and muted colors. So that would be, I would love to see what that was like pre-colors. Because, again, I think you're, like, the standout is, for me, is a lot of your shadows and your lighting, especially in this book, where it kind of guides a lot of the action. So... see kind of what your perspective was in black and white would be really interesting.
Yeah, sure. I mean, because like, I don't think a lot of comic book artists think in color. Like they might have an idea, but it's not precise. I think the one that do would be like David Mazzucchelli, Mike Mignola, Moebius, and Richard Corben. But the other ones are like, they don't have the time, the energy, or the will to think about colors. So most of the time, the colors are just supplied by somebody else. But it's interesting because, like, some of those comic book artists, I find that, like, they kind of rely on the colorist to make the page work. Like, not that it isn't, like, a nice page or it doesn't have nice drawings, but like it will be harder to read if the page wasn't colored. Mm-hmm. While but so most of the comic book artists I enjoy usually are kind of autonomous in their pages to be readable. So it will be the one that think about color that I just named, or like black and white artists, like like Alex Toth is an example of it. All of his work doesn't need colors, and it's like the colors are not really a part of the drawing, like they're just apply over it. So I can't really afford to think too much about colors, because that would be like pretty much thinking about painting or something.
Are you hand lettering then, especially on your own stuff?
The hand lettering on the Dark Angel of Darkness was really rough and fast, and I was writing the dialogue at the same time. So thinking about the dialogue at the same time. But I've learned to enjoy that phase. Now I'm like taking a lot more of my time, and it's actually a very, very fun part of the process.
So is it still, are you kind of scripting now, or is it still kind of, 'cause I'd imagine like having to leave room for some of the dialogue that was in Dark Angels, like making that fit and work. I think like obviously if your approach is kind of page to page, it like works out perfect. But like, are you scripting more now, or is it still kind of free flowing and like? Because you could probably read Dark Angels of Darkness like without the dialogue. I think like visually, there's a lot of narrative there. Is that important? And also, but now kind of, are you scripting anymore?
Yes to both. I do script more right now, but it always been a very important aspect for me that like you can read without the scripts, because ultimately it's not what the characters say that's important to me, it's like how they say it. So they could pretty much just say anything, because like the story is like pretty simple, like you understand it with the cover, like it's like, oh, these bad guys like are fighting these good guys. And so I don't want to teach you anything about like a scientific world or like a politic of whatever. I just want you to feel about the characters. So they could really talk about hats, or they could talk about palm trees. It's not really important. I think you could read the whole comic without the dialogues. I agree with you. But I've learned to enjoy good dialogues more. And now I script my stories a lot more, but it always like through doing the pages when I do the lettering, there will be still words that will change right to the end, because I'm revising it as I go.
Yeah, well, I think, and maybe that comes a lot from kind of the like manga style or influences, like your ability to kind of emote, especially facially, is like really good. And I think Megan is like a great example of that, again, because he's just kind of a mask helmet, but in that character design you afford for like kind of the larger lips and the larger eyes. So like at almost any time, like he can even be kind of like off model, but be able to kind of emote, and especially when he goes into his like the fusion, like that stuff's still present. So like almost always, like he has a like a smarminess about him, like that is, you're able to get even just kind of by his like physical appearance or like movements.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, well, acting is a lot films, like people love film because you're documenting people, and that like that's a big advantage the medium has over comics. I think comics have its own unique reason to be as interesting, but I think if you really devote yourself, you can go get these qualities too in comics. And yeah, I really appreciate it when a comic book artist does it. I try my best to like Well, I mean, like, anyway, writing a character is, like, it's pretty much like the way he acts. So if you're really having fun writing your comic, you'll start to think about how he sits, how he moves, how he laughs, and yeah.
Right. Well, yeah, unless it's, like, a DC book, then they're just standing there. But
sorry, what?
I said unless it's just, like, a DC book, then they're probably just standing there looking tough.
There's another, well, in comics, there's this thing that I, like, if you think about a classical superhero comics, there's a lot of amazing comic book artists who work on superhero comics. But the general idea that we get from superhero comics is, it's this kind of sculptural world where, like, everybody's, like, posing in an epic drama moment. And I do love that. I find it inspiring, and I try to put some of it in my work, actually. Like, I think there's moments where it can be funny or inspiring, but if an artist get himself a bit too much in that way, like, it might be a bit extreme, like, to, and not really convincing. So.
Yeah, well, I think of, like, I always think of what's it, like, JoJo's Bizarre Adventure is, like, the like extreme of, like, what you would see with, like, Jim Lee Superman pose.
Yes.
Like, but it works so much more kind of like in that expressionism of comics and the medium versus kind of just like a standard, like, at the hips pose where, like, JoJo is just like these extreme, like, exaggerated, like,
well, because JoJo, like, the author behind it are aware that, like, they're aware of that element. Well, mm-hmm. maybe, like, some comic book artists are just influenced by the genre and the code, and they haven't really taught it too much. But I think it's fine because it has I look a lot at these artists too, and they have a poignant force to it, and they haven't become the icon they are for no reason. It's, like, mostly for that reason, because they're strong, bold pictures. And but yeah, it can, like, you know, there's a lot of comics that are done, so, like, sometimes a story might need other things and it can get redundant. But yeah, I think, like, you take all the greatest comic book artists and you make sculpture out of them, like, that work in superheroes, like, those are amazing sculptures. So
I think your next work is coming out from, and it took me forever to figure out, it's Piao Piao, right? Like,
yeah, I was calling them Pew first, but
that's what I thought was, like, I've been calling them for, like, 2 years, like, Pew Pew.
Yeah, me too. I was doing that.
And then I think it was you in one of your interviews said Piao Piao, and then, like, it clicked in my head that it's, like, it looks obviously like meow meow. And I was like, oh fuck.
But it's just one time. It's just Piao. There's not twice.
Oh, oh man, that's just, yeah, this is me getting excited then. so they do like amazing and beautiful, like, presentations, and, like, obviously with Dark Angels, kind of like at the manga size and the flapjack. Like, is that something when you were going into it, like, you were aware of, kind of like, did you get say into, like, kind of the presentation to it and, like, working at what size you want it to be? And then kind of the design of it as well.
Well, I had opinions, but, like, the editor and I had to discuss about them, and I gave reason to the editor mostly. So most of the visual decision are the editor. And I think he was right. I like all most of it, and now I'm being more influenced by similar ideas as them. Like, the next book I have, like, I think will fit their bill. First I wanted, like, I don't know why, but I wanted bigger, like, just probably because I read a lot of, like, magazines and, like, French comics. But yeah, the small format really works well, and like, of course I have, like, the manga influence, so, like, people, like, understand a bit where it comes from that way, like, easier. Like, it's less of a weird object if it's that format. And
yeah, what's, like, the weird, I always, like, I'm like, I either want it in, like, manga size, or I'm like, make it as big as possible. Like,
yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
like when I get these like standard trade size, I'm like, what is this? I can't read this.
But I'm not getting used to the trade paperback format. I never liked it.
I'm this like where, because I've switched mainly now to like I will buy floppies of like a lot of the independent stuff, but like I just can't like keep up on Marvel, and like at this point I'm just gonna be buried in a house full of floppies. So like I switched to like collecting like the hardcovers and the trades and like the library editions, and like now I'm like I won't even buy like a standard trade paperback. I'm like, get that out of here. Like I'm not gonna read that. Like either again, give me like a beautiful small manga, or like give me something that like I could probably murder someone with. Like,
well, you want some love in the editing process, and like mangas might be small, but like Japanese make really nice book, and feels like the French or the English publisher we have that published the mangas in North America and Europe, kind of feel responsible to make an as pretty book as the original Japanese version. And yeah, the library edition and all are obviously a lot more gorgeous than the trade paperbacks. So, yeah.
It's like sometimes I'll see people post like, oh, like my, you know, the trade of this Batman book came out in France and like this is the French version. I'm like, well, why does that look good? Why is our...
Yeah, it's funny, yeah. Yeah, I have a few comics in French, and they're a lot prettier. Yeah. That's
American. Recently, garbage. I just read Beowulf, the David Rubin illustrated. It's so good, and I love that it's oversized because his art is just amazing.
Is it a new edition? Because I've read it a while ago, and it was quite small.
It's like standard. Dark Horse, like liberation size, yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, it's like a big hardcover. Although he did recently the Grand Abyss Hotel. I think it's an Archaea one, and I love it, and it's hardcover, but it's like one of those like weird like long ones, kind of like the Private Eye. Where I'm like, I don't.
Oh really, yeah.
Now it's like sticking out of my shelf.
Yeah, you shelved that properly.
So what are, so for you next, I know you've teased, is Magnus or Magus the kind of the next thing from you outside of the stuff you're doing with Dagger when that comes out?
Well, pretty much, Dagger and Magus. Dagger, I'm writing it right now and I'm drawing it. I'm doing a short story called Orc Speed. So it's a story about friendship, and it's a bunch of orcs who just stole a bank. And they're in their racing cars, floating racing cars in the middle of the desert. And there's this other guy who sees them and sees an opportunity and follows along, and he wants to hang out with them, but they're like, who the hell are you? And then the cops arrive, and but the new guys like right away get a gun and shoot at the cops, and one of the bank robbers, he's a bit gun crazy, and he get excited, and he shoots, and he sees someone similar as him, and the other guy is shooting, and the two others don't really feel good about guns, so they're like, "Ah, you promised you wouldn't shoot again," and like so they dumped him. So that's how the story starts, and it's this story about these two gun crazy orcs will open a garage and. Try to have a good life, but then you know they will have friendship issues, and so that's my story for Dagger, and then Magus for Piao. I was really excited to get that opportunity. That was my first short story. I scripted all from the beginning, and it's more about like about leadership, a bad leader can affect people, but also still bring stuff to other people, because you know it's like a group are never perfect, and sometimes there are leaders that are not perfect, and most people will get angry at the leaders when they're not perfect. But so I tried to make a story about that, like try to be ambiguous about like how hard it is for everyone in a situation like that, and what's good about it and what's bad about it. And yeah,
is that something with I think for books like, so like that's like a story like that about friendship, but like, you know, filtered through orcs and
yeah,
that, and even in like Dark Angels of Darkness, like there is a through line of kind of you know, love and friendship, and even in kind of the absurdity at times, like there's still that, and then kind of like the trust and worthiness, like there are, I think, larger, you know, narratives at play amongst the like insane fusions and people like punching and getting like arms ripped off and stuff like that. I mean, that's, I think maybe sometimes people miss, like, I think, I don't know, maybe like Prison Pit is the kind of like anomalous where that is like literally just a, like, you know, he goes, he's dropped on a prison, like a prison planet, and he just fights his way through.
But yeah,
a lot of times I think people just try to like recreate stuff like that, like I'm just gonna draw things that I liked as a kid and it's gonna be crazy and wild and all that stuff, and like occasionally that works, but I think some people forget at the same time there has to be, it has to be grounded in some sort of human detail to fight that around. And like Imperius's love for for his dog is like the driving narrative of his life at that point, and like it you feel it, and as it goes through, and like it is like that moment in Dragon Ball where, like, you know, he has to push himself to save everybody, and like that continually pushes him to do that. I mean, is that something like having a clear, you know, narrative or emotion amongst the absurdity is kind of what makes that work.
For sure. I totally agree with you on, I think, like, I mean, there's a lot of, like, books and films that I enjoy, but that don't have such a strong narrative that we can relate to, but I enjoy them for, like, more, like, symbolic or aesthetic region. We need to tell stories about ourselves. We need to like, you know, like to accept things and like learn things, like if fiction doesn't try to like say things about us, it gets boring pretty fast. And you know, like if Orc Speed was just about orcs, like what can I say about orcs? I don't know orcs. What are orcs? Like, will I say there's tall orcs, small orcs, green orcs, brown orcs? I mean, that means nothing. So like most of my orcs, like I could like make them human and then make them on like cars that are not floating, and they actually don't have guns and they just hang out in Montreal, and like it would be the same story. It's just like, it's just that like I'm a geek, and I really love the all the mythology and the symbol of fantasy and science fiction. And I think comics need some storytelling that's like we can relate to. And
last question before Tim's question, I think one thing I'm most interested in, I think, again, knowing kind of your approach to this book, I think, again, the fight sequences are amazing in the way that they're paced, but also, like, the presence, everyone is kind of accounted for, and movement and stuff like that. Do you have a theory to how you approach fight sequences? I know you mentioned, like, and I feel like that's kind of a lot of the love comes from, like, you know, being young and bashing toys together, but, like, taking that and kind of making it work on a clear narrative. Do you have like a theory or approach to your fight scenes?
I think this will be more specific to every book. Like for Dark Angel of Darkness, it was obviously inspired from like superhero comics and mangas, so it had to be extreme, and it has to be like pretty much feel like an opera or like a ballet, and something epic. And and also it allowed me to express like drawings that are directly connected to the whole symbols of superheroes. So it's all about like super epic poses. And my only goal while during the fight scene in that book was like, how can I get like that really epic moment? Like, let's say when Imperius Ra fusion with Retank, like I wanted to see him like jump over the fire guy, and so the pretty much the whole scene where he jumps at him, and like it was just so like I can see him like jump over, so that you when you turn the page you see him in a different light, because like the fire on him will like influence the way I draw Imperius Ra. So yeah, that was pretty much the only reason that all fight scene exists, because I wanted to do that drawing. Yeah, I've been doing a comic for 2 years called Dark Oasis. Mm-hmm. And this one is completely different. I'm actually the whole time kind of trying to sabotage the action, like not make it what you would think it would be. So like my process is completely different. It's the complete opposite of it.
So. Well, even as I butcher the name of it, the Chevalier Battier.
Sorry, what?
Chevalier.
Chevalier Bataille. Yeah. Sorry.
Like that one is more like, cause that one, like there's like range weapons and stuff like that. And like, there's like, that one's more about, I feel like the action in that, like you're more, that one's being aware of kind of space and proximity and stuff like that. Cause you have to take into account like weapons and cover and stuff like that. So like, yeah, it seems like I love the different approaches to that. Cause obviously like that one you take into account, there's a lot more like space and openness in those scenes. Cause then you're kind of, as a reader, able to kind of read as to like closeness and proximity and kind of where like that is working as it progresses.
Yeah, thank you. Well, talking about that kind of space is like one of the hardest aspect of action scenes. Like I will find like a art martial scene. Well, I wouldn't say it's easier, because probably there's a lot of people doing it better than me, so these people will say, no, you don't know what you're talking about. But I find that the most complicated and the most interesting for me, the one where I can talk about space in different ways. Like, oh, suddenly this guy is so small because we're seeing it from there. And I don't know, like there's a tree about to fall, so do we see it from close? Like how tall is the tree? What does it like? Yeah, manipulating space like that is really fun and really, and also really hard.
Are you comfortable with kind of like keeping panels on the page versus like, again, I'm looking through Dark Angels right now. There's a few full pages, but I think even like when things get kind of hectic, like you still kind of keep it like with some panels on the page to break things up.
If I'm comfortable with the idea of doing splash page, I'm not sure too.
I think like kind of the bigger action in the book, like very few times do you go to like the full page. There is one splash page in it, but I enjoy like even when things get hectic, like a lot of times you'll even break it down further into like smaller grids. Like I think a lot of your action takes place in like the grids, which I enjoy. I think like there's very few instances where you'll like pull to have like two people punching on like one big page.
Yeah, for sure. It's something that's constantly on my mind, like how do you pace anything, action or not action. And but specifically to action is like, well, I mean, drama or action, like when there's a moment that's more like filled with emotion, like do you give more? Do you give less? Like, do you want to break it? Like, do you want like, do you show that moment as like something super important or not really important? So the size of the panel and how much, the size and how much panel there's in a page would totally change it, how the reader will feel about a certain information. So yeah, a guy punching another guy in the face is in a big splash page. It's been done so many times. That yeah, if I use a splash page, I must have like a really good reason. And the kiss was a good one, I thought, because like I'm glad you mentioned it earlier, because like kiss scenes was like, I'm kind of referring like love romantic comic for girls from the 50s or what, like how is he referring that? Like you don't expect that like in this kind of book, so it's funny. And I'm not losing the strength of it. Like it's actually a good idea. Like it's good storytelling. They were right to do that. But But yeah, like, I'm doing an action comic. Am I really going to put, like, a splash page of two guys punching each other? Like, it's been done so many times. So maybe I'll try something else. But it's not just also in relation to others. It's also, as a writer, what do you want to put the emphasis on? How do you want people to feel about something? So,
I think last question, because now it's going to bug me. Did you come up with a fusion name for the lovers?
Actually, I was going through these two were supposed to become something more, and they weren't supposed to die at first. Like, they were my main characters at first.
Oh, really?
And, yeah, they had a name, and they had their whole pages of description who they were, but I don't have it, like, easy access like that right now, but, yeah, they have a name, but I don't remember what it is.
Yeah, so cool. Because, like, the few, like, shots you get of, like, their face, like, I love, they look like, oh, I'm going to blank on the names, but, like, the demons in Berserk, the four, like, gods who control it. Like, his design is so good. But
yeah, it was kind of inspired by, like, Inhumans, the Jack Kirby, kind of, like, a bit more gothic or, like, yeah.
So I will let Tim ask his final question, and then we'll kind of cover where people can find your stuff if they want to.
Cool. So, Al, gun to your head, if you were forced to write one episode of The Big Bang Theory, what would happen?
I would write a Big Bang Theory episode? Is that the question?
Yeah, if you had to write one episode of Big Bang.
Oh, damn. Well, I'm sorry, but I know what Big Bang it is, but I've never watched it. So,
yeah.
But like, I could do whatever I want. That's a question?
Yeah.
Gosh, that's a hard question. What will I do? I mean, there's a lot of things I want to do. I think I will make them go to the gym. It will be a day at the gym.
Perfect.
I think it might have been the one we posted this week. Interviewed Steve Yowell, who did like Zenith and stuff with Morrison, and Tim wasn't on that one because like I had to accommodate for him being in the UK, and like so I recorded with him at like 10 in the morning my time, and I think that was like I don't know, it was like 7 your time or whatever, but I got to the end and I was like, maybe I should ask Tim's question. And I'm like, I'm not going to ask his one like legend and also someone who was, I don't even know if they have the Big Bang Theory in the UK. So I'm like, I had this like random guy about the Big Bang Theory.
So did you ask him?
I was like, I hope it's in Canada.
Well, I have friends who watch it. I just haven't. They keep telling me I should watch it actually, but yeah, I don't watch a lot. I don't have time.
It's for the best. You spend that drawing and watch The Big Bang Theory. So if anyone wants to find your stuff, what's the best way they could do that?
Well, I wish I could have an easy answer for that, but ultimately they can feel comfortable contacting me. And otherwise, I have my Big Carl, so they can order Chevalier Bataille there. And if they want original pages, they can go through Inky Knuckles. And if they want Dark Angel of Darkness, they can find it on the PR website. And if they're Francophones, I have a French editor called Pow Pow. They do sell online too, and you can find them in library if you're in France or in Canada. And I'm doing soon another Kickstarter. For my book, Dark Oasis. I'm going to self-publish it in small issues.
So excited. Is that 5 and, issues?
Sorry?
Are you doing 5 issues for that?
Yeah. And yeah, Dagger, well, the 17 artists on the project will sell a copy of it themselves on their website or through local libraries of where they're living. So there will be a lot of ways to get Dagger.
Are you at any point, I guess, going to reissue Backstab? Is that something that's going to be
available? Oh, well, Dark Oasis is Backstab, actually. So It's just that, like, yeah, that's confusing, but yeah, Backstab just wasn't going the right direction, so I kind of like do a few changes, and it became Dark Oasis. And
okay, now I don't feel, I'm like, every time I go to your cartel, I'm like, I just see it's like sold out. I'm like, I gotta have it. But all right, that's good. Yeah, and I'm trying to think. Yeah, and occasionally there's sale, but like to get Dark Angel of Darkness, like it's like it should be way much more money than they charge. It's beautiful. It's like oh my god.
Yeah, you're right. They have a discount right now. So if you guys weren't, but not you, but if any listeners weren't too sure, like it's 50% discount right now. So
I know it's a steal, and it's almost like insulting that it's so good. Like it's so good. Tim, where can we find you doing stuff?
I write over at Comics Pit, and I'm on Twitter and Instagram at Tim Madera.
And I don't know, again, you're listening to the podcast, so you probably know how to find us, but at pages_panels. I think when this one comes out, we will have just done our first ever live stream comic book club, so that's not really going to help you if you're listening to this, but if that does sound interesting, we'll have a vote up for October's picks, and I think they're going to be quote-unquote spooky picks, whatever that means, so check that out. But I don't know, is rating reviews, all that shit, but more importantly, go pick out pick up anything by Al, support. Yeah, and if whenever this Dark Oasis book, you launch that, like, people better fucking back that, because I know they will, but, like, I need that more than anything. So that's, like, my whole like, real goal of having a comic book podcast is, like, I just invite people on that I want to talk about more, because I want more of their stuff. So, like, I'm just, like, people, like, go out and buy everything you can by that, so I can have more things by these people.
I really appreciated the invitation and the whole session. I really thank you very much for thinking of me. Thank you for reading me too, and hope I'll get here another time, like when I get another book or something.
Yeah, definitely. Like I said, Ian, go pick it up. It's great. It's easily like already one of my favorite comics. I could look at I think I read another reviewer mention this, and I hadn't thought about it till they said it when I was doing research. Like, it's a book that hasn't made it to their bookshelf, and that's the same with mine. It's been on my desk for like over a month, just because I like look through it all the time, and like I don't want to put it on the bookshelf, just because like I'll occasionally go up and like, I don't know how he decided the shadows on that page. It doesn't make any, like, I didn't figure that out. We really appreciate you taking the time to come on and talk about it.
Thank you very much.
And that's this episode of Crazy Pain.